gotcha.
Yeah, I gotcha. I reached out and I gotcha. Huh.
You gotcha nose. What you gonna do about that?
What you gonna do about it? Welcome to the DL Gaming Podcast. This episode, we're going to be talking about Call of Duty Black Ops 6, Cult of the Lamb, with a special guest, and Windblown. But first, my name is Christian.
Hello, I'm Amanda.
I'm Emilio, and we are missing Nick and Bobby, but we do have a special guest, so that might make up a little bit for them.
Yeah, well, two of them together as one wife. I don't know. If I mix Bobby and Nick, would they make a good partner for me? Would that, do you think?
If you had to choose to live with them two or her, I feel like you'd pick them two. Just because of, no, I don't know. That's a tough
two?
One, man.
Yeah, that is tough. Two might be better than one.
I feel like Bobby brings the brains and Nick brings the brawn. So the two of them together, you should be pretty well set. Yeah.
Yeah.
You haven't seen Rianne kick. It's like a horse. She'll fuck anybody up.
Fair point. You're right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Her horse kicks. How could any of us forget her famous horse kicks?
Oh, she has one. Remember we played D&D? She played a horse, dude.
Yeah, she did. When she walks around the house, you hear tuck, 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 tuck. Like, I don't know why she walks like that, but now I know. Okay, Amelia, what are we plugging this week?
We're plugging Blue Sky. It's a social media app because... and they chose me to talk about it because I've never seen it or heard about it before. So I'm going to try to sell you on something I don't know. First of all, it has a really nice name. Yeah. And then it's also not ambiguously named. It's not either X or Twitter. It's definitely Blue Sky. That I'm sure of.
Right.
Besides that, you should go there and find out what it is and where we are and then use it. Yes. Right?
In that order, I think. Yep.
Okay, cool. There it is.
That's great.
Blue Sky.
Awesome.
Blue Sky, everybody.
Blue Sky. Skies are blue. We ping things on the show, and I just quickly wanted to ping that apparently people are now finishing their Civ 7 runs. So they're in testing of Civ 7. First of all, how dare people do this? How dare they finish their Civilization game? I think the best part about a Civilization game is getting halfway through and being like, I'll just start another one. That's like quintessential Civilization. I think I've made it to the end of like three Civilization games and they're all like burned into my memory because they're all like nuclear war, you know, like it was a
global
standoff.
Don't cluster your faults on everybody else, dude.
True. Okay. So in Civ 7, they have this new ages system. So every age you get to, there's three ages. You reinvent your civilization. And apparently, according to the lead game designer, that's keeping things fresh enough for testers to actually finish their Civilization 7 runs. So what does this mean for me? It means I'm excited about playing Civilization 7, but I wonder if the series is straying too far from the light, because really a pillar of this game is never finishing it, and it's just, are they solving a problem that no one wanted solved? Like, did anyone care they didn't finish? Yeah,
it seems like if they're talking about it this early, maybe that was like a mandate of theirs. On the like, okay, when we make this new one, guys, like nobody's finishing games. We need to. Why? If it's selling, why? Maybe that's the part that makes it different. That's your twerk that you're gonna put on it this time. People actually want to finish it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of curious too how they're doing this. Like, are they making it very realistic, which is that somebody poured some water in their hot vat of their turkey deep fry and they lit the whole town on fire, and then you had to restart your civilization because your whole civilization, went up ablaze? Or yeah, how are they doing this? Because that would be interesting.
I forget the specific. I think like every age you have like some sort of crises, like maybe a plague or like an earthquake or something. And then you build your new civilization on top of the ruins of your old one. Mm. But you get to keep some of that one as you head into the new one. And also they're not like you can go from England to Japan, you know, like there's still like the names of the civilizations we know, but they're not like related to one another. I have to learn more about it, but people finishing their Civ games, I'll believe it when I see it. How about that? When it's out, we'll see how many people finish.
That Amanda, is pretty cool, though. I like that idea, because basically that's all we are, is like, building on the shoulders of the ones we came before with whatever that happened to be left over by the giant fireball.
Loved exactly, it. Dude. And like you were telling me when you went to Mexico City, like, so cool. These civilizations bear no resemblance to each other, and yet they're sitting right on top of each other.
Literally on top of each other.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
What would be left over? That's just dope. The stone dildos and arrowheads.
That's what was left over at Pompeii. A bunch of dicks. A bunch of erect dicks.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you know, you just got tons of porn drawn on the wall, carved into the wall, actually. Yep. So, I mean, that's not going anywhere. But what is going somewhere is what I pinged, which is Valve's antitrust lawsuit apparently is moving to a class action lawsuit. So what this means is that basically they kind of, there's a judge that made like a latest decision of where anybody and all the devs that had filed like as a part of this from, I think, before like 2017 are now included in this class action lawsuit. And so what can end up happening from this is basically that Valve kind of forces games to be sold at like a price on Steam, and they aren't allowed to sell their games lower on something like Epic Game Store or GOG or something while they are on Steam. And so like Wolffire and Dark Cat are trying to force Valve to stop these practices. So I feel like if they go through with this, you know, games could become cheaper. Or, you know, just as we're kind of seeing with a lot of laws going kind of against and lawsuits going against Google with being kind of a monopoly, perhaps this is coming towards Steam. I don't know. Have you guys like heard anything about the lawsuit or, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you have any, or you're just kind of like, I don't care. I'm a Steam boy till I die.
I haven't heard about this antitrust lawsuit, and I'm shocked that Valve enforces like a pricing rule that says you can't sell something lower on another platform, because I've seen things been sold lower on GOG a lot of the time, because GOG will run sales that are opposite of Valve sales. So there's always something on sale. If it's not on sale on Steam, it might be on sale on GOG. So I think the wording of this article is that they claim Valve forces developers to make this happen. I don't know exactly what that means. I'm just wondering, like, what are the specifics? Yeah.
I don't think so, but maybe from time to time they do that. But they don't do exclusivity, right? So maybe that's their version of exclusivity. So a long time ago, one of my coworkers went to jail for something. I forget what it was, like armed robbery or something. Or I forget what it was. And he came up to me and all his other coworkers. He's like, guys, you got to get me out of here. Can you please write a letter of like telling them I'm a good guy? So I spent a lot of time on this, and I wrote a really nice letter. And I don't know how many other people did. So I was like, fuck, that's some of my best work right there, right? So I turn it in. He gets off. Fucking a month later, he comes into the store we were working at and robs us at gunpoint. Same guy. So, but either way, I would sign my name in blood, the defending Steam. On
whatever. I was wondering where I was like, dude, that's not cool. What did he do with all the arms? Armed robbery?
Jesus Christ.
That's horrible.
Dude.
That's horrible.
You ever wish you could take something back?
Being a father? No.
Whoa.
It comes with the territory, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's only going to get worse from here. But yeah, this was, thanks for bringing this up. I want to look more into this lawsuit and what's going on. It specifies it's from 2017. So I'm wondering, like, were they doing this in 2017? And it's just now being brought up. I'm not 100% sure, but interesting.
Yeah, like I guess and from what I understand of it is that like they've kind of been doing this, and there is a lawsuit that's been going on for a while. But now the new update is that basically it's not just the Cat and the two, it's not just Wolffire and Dark Cat, because now like all the developers that have been impacted since this are now included in this class action lawsuit. So it's kind of expanded in a way. So, and that could go back to kind of one of the things of how there have been games that have been on sale in other places cheaper than Steam, is that like maybe Wolffire and Dark Cat themselves had to like sign and publish them and like have to deal with these anti-competitive practices, and maybe it is more of a case-by-case basis. But the new update in this lawsuit is that now all the other developers are included in this class action lawsuit as well. So, but apparently this lawsuit has been going on for a while, in that there are anti-competitive measures that Steam participates in things such as like they can Steam determines like when they can sell things much more cheaply than the developers making money off of, or that there are certain games that aren't able to sell lower. And I'm assuming that they can't sell them lower at the same time as when they're selling them on Steam, obviously. Right. And so I don't know this, if it continues to move forward, then there should be more competition between the different sellers and things like that. And so I'm kind of thinking that, you know, as a consumer, we're going to see much cheaper options, I guess, for games. Or, yeah, who knows, maybe we won't. But this looks like it could end up making games much more affordable in ways if there are other competitors to Steam. Even though I myself prefer Steam all the time, I love how easy it is to use. So,
and with Emilio's strongly worded letter, I don't think this
lawsuit's
going to go anywhere once they get that. He has a history of the letters being very effective.
So I'm looking them up. Wolfire, I looked up their five games that they have. I've never seen any of them. And then I'm looking up the other one, Dark Cat. And I've never seen any of their game either.
So according to Emilio, these two are shit and they should shut up. And it's only Steam. Daddy Steam, come and support us.
You'd go to war for Daddy Steam.
No, what I mean by that is like sometimes if you're small enough, but you're still in a system that maybe might be bad, it's worth it for you to take the risk to try to start something like this. Like the... some fighters got together and tried to sue the UFC. It's actually still going on. It's been going on for like 10 years. But it's always the like lower known, never made it to champion fighters that sign up against it. I feel like, I don't know, you have less to risk than going up against Valve with a giant company. But I don't know.
Right.
I've never heard of, and it's weird that I've never heard of any game from a developer. You know, like, who are these people?
Yeah, that's but I true. Could see it to where, like, if it's a small-time developing team, like, it would be difficult to really kind of make it and to make a lot of money if you have to go through Steam as your publisher and they have so much control over how much you can sell your game at. Like, that does have to be very constricting. And
absolutely.
There are anti-competitive policies out there, too, with it. So, like, that would also make it a lot more difficult, I'd imagine. And more and more small-team developers are trying to make it, and it's just kind of one of those things where I think that it's getting tougher out there for sure for the indie and smaller developers. And this might be another kind of roadblock in their system, right? But I don't know. It's interesting. We'll see it coming out. But
as I was looking for my ping for today, I saw this thing that said that the developers of... oh, man, I'm going to lose the name of... Disco Elysium. Said that they're going to go to war with Valve, and I expected that to be tied in with this, but that wasn't one of their games. Maybe they're going to join the... I don't know. It was a headline, but I thought it was weird that I read that right before you started talking about that. Anyway, my ping is the PC Gaming Show is returning. That's going to be this Thursday coming up, 2 days after you listen to this, if you listen on Tuesday. It comes out the 5th. And it's one of those things where they show a bunch of previews, they talk to developers, they kind of do what we do but with video and not nearly the production value, let's be honest. But anyway, it's coming out, so look out for that.
Sweet PC Gaming Show. Hopefully we'll get some cool announcements. And now we're moving on to highlights. So these are games that we actually played. And Amelia's going to start us off. And I hear the whistling in the air. I feel a gentle breeze.
Wind blown.
That's the name of the game, folks. What's this?
I thought we were going somewhere else with that. Wind blown. John bought me this. And we played a few times and we just couldn't beat the boss. Let me tell you what it is first. It's... a roguelike, action roguelike, by the people who kind of pushed it forward. I really think that Dead Cells was the first action roguelike that presented the mix of action and building your character in rapid succession that Hades finally perfected. So, like, I think Dead Cells came out, And there's a lot of iterations of that. And then Hades came out and kind of brought it all together.
Right.
And so now Wonder Twin, I think it, no, that's not it. Motion Twin, come back around. They took the Hades thing and made it multiplayer. So it's a multiplayer Hades, three players. And it's built for the ground up for multiplayer. You can, there's a few tricks, right? I mean, there's a few things right there. Well, when you're playing, you can like, you're like, okay, this is not optimal for a single player. It just totally seems like it's made for three. My case in point, John and I were playing it, could not beat the second boss. Played it with three players, just breezed right through the second boss. So I don't think it even has scaling right now because it's in early access. Despite that, it is super fun. Like, we got squashed by the same boss. It felt like playing with your little brother and trying to beat a boss on like, or getting through a level on Super Mario. We just kept throwing ourselves at it over and over because it's so fun. So the movement of the game is extremely fast. You can dash by pushing a button and there's no cooldown on that button. So you could just like Dead Cells, you can dash nonstop, which makes the game very, very fast. But you don't get very important upgrades as often as Dead Cells. And I thought about like why that is. And I think it's because since it's built for multiplayer, they don't want people constantly being in the weeds trying to build their build. So you have to make an important decision like every 4 or 5 minutes. It's not like every 30 seconds or 1 minute like it is in Hades or Dead Cells. And I thought that was, at first you think that that's detrimental, but then you think about, oh, I hate it when I'm waiting for other people to level up. So I thought that was a really good little twist that they put in there. Production value, there's a little anime that plays before it. It's gorgeous. The music is amazing. The sound, the graphics is great. Not a lot of faults here. I mean, there's so much. We're unlocking things constantly. We're strategizing about which unlocks we should pick so we don't go, you know, overlap our, because I might unlock something, it'll unlock it in the game for all of us. And so the other people shouldn't waste their resources on those. Or you start building into what you like more. I started going range more, so I'm going more into ranged. Yeah, I don't have anything bad to say about this game, other than it doesn't seem to scale very well for two players. Maybe there's a single and a three players, and it just doesn't have one for the medium. Besides that, even on single player, you can't pause the game, just like you can't if you were playing in multiplayer. So it's like very geared for multiplayer, which is fine. Like that's probably what their focus is in
early access. It is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. If you get that nailed, you have a hit game. They already have a hit game. I think it's, let me click on it here, 85% or 90 something.
Yeah, it's in the 90s, 90 and 91.
Yeah, 91%. Like, yeah, I recommend this to everybody at whatever price. $25, it's worth it. That's the full price. It's on sale right now for 10% off, but I would pick it up now. They might raise their price when they go full thing. What else? I think that's all I have on this. I mean, wins all around. What else can I say?
This looks awesome. And I think I must have somehow missed this. October 24th, it came out, 2024. 9,700 all-time peak players. That's kind of high for a launch of what this game might be. And yeah, so positive. Like, I'm wind blown away that I haven't seen this game on Steam yet, you know? So...
Not bad.
Cool that you. Thank you. I'm getting better. Amanda, what do you got?
It's beautiful. It's
I haven't heard of this game either. Call of who? I've never called her.
Call of Booty. No, Call of Duty. Black Ops 6. You know, something that it's a Call of Duty game, but I will say, I feel like I've been trying to play this for a while. I finally was able to play it. I played a little bit of the campaign, which the campaign is such high production, so well done. You basically are going through like debriefing of missions, and then you play the mission as like the tutorial, which I already love when they kind of do tutorials in such a storytelling and the metro or theometrical way or what, theatrical way. Theatrical? Yeah, I just combined two words. Theatrical.
Word. I love that.
Theometrical though. Because it's analytical and theatrics. Yes. No.
Yeah, you own that. You own that word.
I will defend that. No, yeah. No. So it's really, really cool. You know, like you in the tutorial, you go to Kuwait and you're doing these missions of saving somebody and fighting. Mm. So that's how you're learning how to maneuver and how to move and your different, you know, guns and stats. And it's great. And then I was like, okay, well, I want to check out multiplayer because that's typically what I've always played. And so I loaded it up. I played some team deathmatch just to get the hang of it. There's a double XP going on this weekend, so that's been wonderful. And it's just fun. It's funny because, like, of course it's Call of Duty, so yeah, it can't be Call of Duty without there being a shitload of problems and troubleshooting right off the gate. It's like, cool, why am I only getting 30 hertz out of my monitor? Or like, why isn't this connecting? Why am I doing that? So it's like, as soon as you get past that, though, I promise you, it's worth it. It's fun. So
is this the one with like, you throw the knife and you can control with a thumbstick where the knife goes?
I think so. I haven't thrown any knives yet.
Okay.
So I'll have to test that out. But this one is one, because I, you know, forgive me if like the last one had this, but I don't recall it. This one has this mode called Prop Hunt. And let me tell you about Prop Hunt. First, let me take it back a second and tell you that, like, when I was playing, you know, Call of Duty Team Deathmatch, at first it was really funny because I was just like, I was doing so great. I was like, oh yeah, I got my like AK-47 and it's like triple kill. And I'm like, this is why I love this game. And then the next map was this map called Babylon, which is basically a Shipment remake. If you remember Shipment, that map, or Rust, that's an older one too, where it's just a tiny little pressure cooker and everybody's dying. And it's so hilarious in the sense that it's just like right after feeling this high of wins and having like a really high KD, I then go to this Babylon and it's just dying, 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 spawn killed, dying. Oh, I spawn with all the enemies and die right away. And I'm just like, I hate this game. And so just once again, it's Call of Duty. So you know what it's like. But I do feel like out of all the Call of Duties, which I've been playing since Call of Duty 4, I was super into Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, was very into Call of Duty Modern Warfare in 2019, was like kind of the last one where I got super into it. I played almost majority of them within that time frame. I did not play much of the very last one, but otherwise, I feel like this game is amazing. This is one of the best like iterations of Call of Duty, I think, of Black Ops 6. They've definitely put a lot of work into it, both in the way that it feels and the production value of it. Like I said, it looks amazing. It plays pretty well, but it's still, at the end of the day, Call of Duty. So there's still shenanigans and bullshit that happens, but I do feel like it's either low or it's part of the charm, like you getting blown up and just completely yeeting up into the sky and being like, what the fuck? So, which is funny and fun way to play. So I'll go back to, speaking of like goofy, that this new mode they have is called Prop Hunt, and it takes a lot longer. There's basically, you do the best out of three is what you're aiming for. And if you do two and two, then it's a tiebreaker. So it has the chance of going long. And I think matches typically take like 40 to 45 minutes, probably. It's a longer feeling map match for sure. And what it is it's essentially hide and seek, because one team loads in and they are props or pieces of the map. And you have to hide and blend in, and you can create three decoys of yourself, or you can change what you are three times. You also can stun the other team three times. And so what it is you get a head start when you're the props, and you pick places to hide, and you can watch, you know, a fucking chair or a dirt bike just like glide across the map, and that's your teammate, and they're hiding. And then when the match starts, the other team comes in basically just nonstop, like putting bullets into everything all right? Around yeah, you.
That's what I would imagine.
Yeah. And so they're just shooting everything, and you are trying to dodge and not get hit and hide at the same time. And so I've seen kind of two ways of doing this. So like last night I played with my boyfriend and with Tag Loro, and Tag Loro, I think, had like one of the best fucking plays that I saw with this prop hunt is hilarious. He was a barrel, and he was just, he first was kind of maneuvering around people. Like, somebody would come into the building he's in and he would slowly sneak out when they weren't looking to go around and then like behind them. And then at one point he like hops up into the corner as a barrel and he just sits there, and there's just like 3-4 guys shooting at every corner, and not a single bullet fucking hits him, and they completely run past him, and it was just like, oh my god, it's so much fun. It's such a blast. And there's been moments too where it's been really funny being the other team as well, because you can kind of always tell when the prop or whoever's playing that is panicking, because you run by and you'll see like a little egg crate kind of thing, and you'll shoot at it, and all of a sudden it quickly turns into a huge ass fucking table, and then it turns into a barrel, and it's like running, trying to not get blown. And then all of a sudden everybody gangs up and there's like 3 or 4 people shooting at this thing, trying to kill it. And it's just hilarious. It is very funny. So what I like to do is I like to play a lot of team deathmatch or domination right now. And then to kind of break it up, I'm playing prop hunt, because prop hunt is where it's very funny. There was one moment where, I played, it looked like some bougie bitch's villa up in the mountains, like is what the map looked like. There's so many maps too, by the way. Like, I feel like I've been playing for maybe 8 to 10 hours so far I've played, and there's so many maps that I have not tried yet. Like,
wow. Call of Duty maps are generally smaller than like Battlefield maps, though, right? Yeah,
they are. But some of them have been really cool. Like, there's one called Red Card where you're basically playing on a big, huge soccer field. Mm. And so that one's pretty cool, because you can go into the bleachers and you go to the outside and you go to like kind of basically the parking lot. You can go to the little like practice area where they have little soccer balls and stuff. And there's been some really fun moments with that. But yeah, this the prop hunt is pretty fun. And prop hunt has better maps than others, right? And so, of course, every map is so important based on like what mode you're playing. Yeah. Like, I do feel like if you were doing something like Search and Destroy, playing on that Babylon, or it's basically a Shipment or a Rust remake, like that would be a really good one, because since it is such a small map, it's going to move that game along, you know? Whereas I feel like something like Prop Hunt, it would be very difficult to be a prop on that small of a map. But there are some maps like this fancy bougie villa, which is really fun on Prop Hunt, because there's a lot of stuff in that map. Right. A lot of stuff.
Just
so that one, just completely laying around. And so the first time that I played it, I was like this enormous table. I was like, there ain't no way somebody's gonna know that I'm fake. Like, this is this table is the size of like 4 bodies. It's like, it's too big of a goddamn table. Like, I don't think it's gonna fit. And so I switched to something, and it was this like tiny little like bread crate. And I was like, oh, that's perfect. And so
is it random what you turn into?
It's totally random. And I could have turned into a dirt bike. I literally did see a dirt bike going across the map, which had me laughing because 3 people were chasing after it. And
I saw a clip where someone was a potted plant and they were like, ah, fuck this. There's not even any plants on this map. And then he changed to the most giant stone pillar ever. He's like, ah, fuck.
Another game, right? This comes some...
What is the history of
indie
prop
game? Hunt? Either an indie game did this or another Call of Duty game did this. Well,
there was a ghost game that was prop hunt, and that was the whole game. I think it was like $14 bucks. I forget what it was called. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a ghost one too.
I feel like it's a genius thing to put in a game like Call of Duty, because Call of Duty has the, as much as like shenanigans and bullshit comes from, like coming from somebody who did play Cyber Attack really, really like passionately and sweaty with a team, it's very funny to have something as troll as a prop hunt in a game like Call of Duty.
Yeah,
because it does
diffuses the tension a little bit too, like you were saying.
It really does. Like, yeah, it diffuses the tension and it just makes it silly. It just makes it silly fun, and it's good. And I will say, it has felt so nice turning off lobby chat, because I don't give a fuck about the toxic lobbies anymore these days. So I don't know how you know, how the lobby or how toxic this Call of Duty is. I don't care. I turned it off. And so I don't want to. It's been a lot of fun. You know, I think that if I were to play something like Search and Destroy or Cyber Attack, I would want voice chat and to be able to talk to my teammates, but I'm just not really interested in that. But what has been funny, of course, is you know, the names of people, and there's so many of them that it's like I'm kind of blanking on the spot of like which ones specifically were funny, but there's just so many, and especially when you do combine it with something as goofy as Prop Hunt.
I feel like I brought down the house with Banana Bong Hit when I was 13. That was, people saw that, they're like, hey, it's Banana Bong Hit. They're like, hey, yeah, I played with you like 2 months ago, how you doing? You know, I met
people. That
is
pretty good.
I had a name for myself. Now hear this. Prop Hunt was created in 2012 to be a hide-and-seek game mode in Counter-Strike Source, and it was ported over to Garry's Mod, where it achieved mass popularity. So, been out there for a while.
That's where I've seen the clips.
Yeah. Then. Is Garry's Mod getting his you know, 12% or whatever for... Is Garry getting... His dues?
I hope so.
Yeah.
But I, you know, that does bring up a really good point, though. I feel like if that were to be a microcosm for this entire game, that is very accurate, actually, is that Call of Duty is so nothing new. Call of Duty has been around since I was a child. And so it's the same thing, right? And like Prop Hunt has been around for forever. Like there's nothing really crazy new about Call of Duty Black Ops 6. But I think what they did is they did such a good job of bringing so many of the things that worked and were really good in the Call of Duty franchise and putting them all together in one Call of Duty. And then also bringing something very funny and fun like Prop Hunt. Because also to having a campaign where you're telling the campaign through debriefing, like in film and especially in a lot of action films, like that's been very successful and also overdone and not overdone, but like done well and done multiple times already as it is. And so them bringing that in the campaign and that being their storytelling style for the campaign, I think worked really well.
I
want to
play
really
the campaign
great.
So bad. And like on our episode.
Dude, it's really good.
I want the game to play the camp. I don't really give a fuck about, I'm more of like a slow shooter kind of guy. Like I like Insurgency Sandstorm and stuff. But the campaign looks so good when they announced it. I was like, what? You're looking for clues in a Call of Duty? My mind was blown. It looks so cool.
It's really good. And playing a bit of the campaign, like I'm really stoked next week to be playing the campaign. But at the same time, I also like I have it on Game Pass. If you have Game Pass, you should absolutely play it. I can't recommend it enough if you have it already on Game Pass. Or if you want a like cheap Cyber Monday, like Black Friday deal on Game Pass, like get it and then play this and then kind of see. Because I also wanted to play this game for the campaign. But at the same time, I'm just having too much damn fun playing multiplayer right now. I'm like, I'm ready for the campaign. Dude, when I kind of burn out of multiplayer.
I know it would suck you. Like, there's... whole people's jobs is to like make a battle pass that sucks you. Like that's just one part of it. Obviously the gameplay is fun too, but like all the accoutrement around the actual gameplay is like, yeah, that'll fucking get me. No, if Crusader Kings 3 can hook me, dude, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, that might as well be injected directly into my veins. Like I would never.
Yeah, and they did some really cool shit of bringing back some of the old things. Like they straight up have like Nuketown 24/7 where you can play Nuketown. Like I remember playing the shit out of that when I was in Modern Warfare 2 in like 2009. I played that so much. And so, but once again, like I do think that the whatever tagline of this Call of Duty Black Ops 6 is same shit, but now it's fresh. Like, in like a good way. That kind of sounded bad, but like in a great way. Because of course there's still a lot of the same Call of Duty things, but this one I think has done really a wonderful job of feeling fresh, feeling new. It's bringing me back to like 2009, 2019, like kind of Call of Duty. And so I'm
it's
having
crazy
a blast
that able
with
to
it
do
so
that.
Far.
I think in some ways it's harder than doing something new, you know.
Absolutely.
So
because
it's
like I said, everybody's played it like all the time and you know what to expect. But this, it really helps. I think the things that they added in this and what they put in it, I think it really helps them that they made such a phenomenal campaign They've added some new and refreshing and fun things that aren't exactly truly new, but they're new to Call of Duty in a way, right? Like the prop hunt, it's hilarious. Like look up anybody for free. Anybody can just look up on YouTube, like prop hunt Call of Duty and watch some of it. And you probably will laugh your ass off watching a table outmaneuver four people with guns. Like it's, it's the funniest thing. It's hilarious. Like, and all in like high res, beautiful graphics. Like it's just so funny. I love it. It cracks me up. I can't wait to play it after this podcast. I will be. I will be playing Call of Duty.
Let's welcome Rianne to the show. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. I'm happy to be on the podcast once again.
I'm surprised you had time enough to put down both your Steam Decks long enough to come over here and talk to us.
Yeah. Not only did I have time to put down my child, I did put down the Steam Deck. I don't know what's taking more of my time lately, the baby or the Steam Deck. It's probably about an even 50-50. It's been a really great thing to have. I actually don't know what I would be doing with my time otherwise.
That's awesome. Yeah, I told Christian at this point, it's they cry, it's one of three things. You take care of one of those three things, and then you get some more time to yourself. General.
Exactly. Yeah, and the baby sleeps on you, and then you're like, okay, well, I'm stuck in this position, so what can I do other than watch TV mindlessly or play the Steam Deck?
Yeah.
Sounds like play some Cult of the Lamb. So, yes. I mean, I want to tell. Yeah, yeah, tell us about Cult of the Lamb.
I love Cult of the Lamb. It's a pretty popular game, so I'm sure that you guys have both heard of it. But if anybody hasn't heard of it, it's like a cozy game, but it's also a roguelike. And if you know me, those are just my two favorite things about games. I like cozy games. Essentially, Cult of the Lamb, you are a little lamb and you are creating a cult. So you create all these followers that are all different little animals. They're very cute. Basically just praise demons. You get to sacrifice your followers. You go into these little chambers and that's where you have your roguelike. So you're trying to defeat these old gods, so that your god can be the supreme god. A really fun game. It's like a mixture of like cozy game where you have your farming, you have your fishing, you cook. So in that way, you kind of get like your Stardew Valley Animal Crossing style. But the thing I have an issue with those games generally is that's all there is. And I don't really have anything else to hook me. The really good thing about Cult of the Lamb is there's still the objectives.
Combat.
Yeah, the combat. Yeah, exactly. So you have your typical roguelike. I mean, I don't know. I've only played Hades. This is my only other roguelike I've played.
It's a good one. If you're going to play one, that's the one to play.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Call of the Lamb is really a good roguelike as well. And when you're in those chambers, obviously your goal is to defeat these gods, but you're also collecting resources so that you can build things to make your cult stronger. So it's really fun. I can't stop playing it.
I'm guessing the more followers you have, the stronger your god is, the more abilities you get or something?
Essentially, yeah. So you can collect followers by rescuing them in the chambers. And you can hold sermons or rituals. And when you do those, then their faith in you increases. The funny thing is that if you do a run and if you die partway through your run, their faith in you decreases because they think you're weak. So I had Christian play it today. He tried it for the first time and he went on a run. He died like immediately. And then their faith decreased. But I said, it's fine. You can just try again. I'll just do like a sermon or something once you get back from the second run. So their faith goes back up. But he goes on a second run. Again, I think he dies in the first chamber. Like, he's really not doing great. And then he does it one more time. I probably shouldn't have let him go three times because he died three times in such a small amount of time that my followers just did not like me anymore. So they started dissenting and like preaching bad things about me. So then my followers.
Like, Christian, it's all your fault.
So what I did is I took my I didn't say you can name your followers. So I've named all my followers after like my friends and family. So I took Christian, my little deer. He was a deer follower.
Sacrificed him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So. So yeah, I sacrificed him and I scared all of my followers into having more faith in me. So yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
You know this because you're married to him, but Christian's not your running guy, run and gun guy. He's not your click and shoot and kill.
No.
Now, if you were gonna like do some civic planning for your cult following, that there's your guy.
Definitely.
He's gonna bring it. Yeah, he's gonna cut down traffic. He's gonna get rid of the smog. He's not gonna aim well with the sword. That's not your guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's your deer.
Exactly. Yeah, he was more so interested in the what can you build, wanting to you know make the cult, probably plan it out, have you know it all work for them, but I just like to go in there and kill some guys sometimes.
No, it's totally true, because like well, I don't play these games for exactly that reason. Like you're building up this farm, I guess, for a better
way of feeding them. Yeah, huh? You have to feed them. If they starve, they'll die or leave your cult.
Oh no, I'm talking about
you
like
just, you starve them out enough and then sacrifice them, right? That's
when they're fat.
Efficiency.
But no, Stardew Valley, like it's only the cozy side of it, right? So
yeah,
like you want to be able to stretch your legs and use all these resources you're gathering up for something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like I hate to say this, I've tried to get into Stardew Valley multiple times. I just can't because it just doesn't have enough of like a path for me to follow. I like to have very specific objectives that I can meet and complete. Cause you know, like I'm a completionist as well. And so this game also has that where it's like, okay, I can collect like, I don't know, 50 different follower types and I can get all of the abilities and max those out. So it just feels like there's more purpose.
I got two suggestions for you. Maybe you've played them. I would say maybe Dave the Diver. I don't know if
I haven't played Dave the Diver, but I have been told I would like it. So
yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, there's not combat, but when you maybe a waiter would tell you different. You go to war when you open service, you know, like you have this sushi restaurant and it is very fast paced while those while the restaurant's open. So that's what you're building up to. You're getting all this fish and going through the story to go to war at night with the customers and try to serve them up fresh fish.
Okay, that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, and the other one is RimWorld. I would play a few more games before you, because it's too complex for me. Too complex. I think Christian said he tried to play it too, but it's basically like you have all these people and you're trying to survive on a planet, and they all have their personality flaws and stuff, and then random shit happens and you'll never have two runs the same. And like
people will just like, is it a roguelike as well?
No, I think you either survive or you and then you have to start all over, but with nothing carries over.
Right.
But it is your little world and the cozy side of it, but it's pretty brutal.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, it's hard to explain, but I think for some reason you might like it.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
I'm glad you're digging it. I really want to play this game. I just haven't.
I've heard such good things about it too, and like I think you summed it up so well of like it being cozy and cozy and brutal. I don't know. It's very woodland creatures of South Park. Being like, you have all this cute, and I love the art style too. The art style is really, really awesome, and the colors, right? Like they're how vibrant are they popping out like on the Steam Deck?
Oh, they're great. Steam Deck like handles it very well. I mean, it works. You can tell that it's working hard when you're playing it, but it looks great.
When Bob, somehow I remember Bobby and Nick both playing this on the same week, and they both came back and they're like, this is a game for you, Emilia. And I was like, just haven't gotten around to it.
People have been telling me to play it since it came out. I think that was like a couple of years ago now, but it is on sale right now. I meant to check before I came on here. I can't remember if it's 50 or 70% off, but it's a really good deal. Because I know I got that and one other game for like $25. So it's quite affordable right now. And it's,
And I just told Christian, right before you came on, I talked about Windblown, which is basically a multiplayer Hades. I think you guys are going to have a lot of fun with that.
Windblown?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. He said he got a game or two for us to play together. So yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. But otherwise, like, I hope that you get 100% on your Cult of Lamb. And oh, she will. For everybody listening. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. She'll definitely.
For sure.
Will.
Yeah. 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 So
and
yeah.
Anybody. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, Hades, I finally 100%ed. And Hades 2, I still haven't gotten. I feel like I'm just trying to drag it out until it's as close to its full release as possible. But yeah. In the meantime, I'm definitely going to be 100%ing this game.
Fuck yeah.
It's perfect. Yeah. I mean, it's such a great game. Even though it came out like in August 11th, 2022, it's still all-time reviews, 95% overwhelmingly positive. And Devolver's such a good team, too, to make things. And it's 50% off right now, only $12.49. Although everybody I've ever heard that has played Cult of Lamb is like $25. It's worth it.
So it's worth half it. Off,
definitely get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you for being our special guest.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, that was fun. Okay, I'm going to go switch back. So.
Bye.
All right.
See ya. Thank Take you. Care of that baby.
Nice to see you guys.
Yeah.
I will.
Good seeing you too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, switching gears. We're going back into being on the radar. These are games that have caught our attention, but we have not played. Amelia, I'm so happy that you put Stalker 2 on here because I've been eyeing that. That's also on Game Pass for everybody listening and wants to play Black Ops 6 on Game Pass. There's Stalker 2 on there as well. But, dude, what caught your eye about it?
So I watched a couple reviews on it, and I say this about like all the Russian or Eastern Bloc games. They're, you know, you have your American games and you have your Asian games, and for a long time that's all you had to choose from. There's nothing else. And then Metro came out, and it definitely had its own feel. And these Stalker games have their own feel because they're perspective on the world is different, aka shit's way harder generally. Like, they just like, I think I made this joke a few weeks ago where just shooting monsters is like that's fucking easy for the Russians, dude. Like, no, we need to give you goggles that are broken, and you need to have a respirator, and you need to keep a little, and you got to make sure the bread is moldy but not too moldy. It's just like all these things. And so I'm watching these review ACG, I saw his review on it, and he was like, going and getting quests is almost a quest in itself, because you don't know who you can trust. Like, almost all games, like, quest givers are good or on your side. Maybe once in a while one might trick you, but he's like, you have to watch your P's and Q's with every single person, because they might be setting you up. They might kill you right there on the spot while they're talking to you. They're surrounding you while they're talking to you. And so it's like, when does this ever happen? You know, I think he was talking about another quest where somebody was like, oh, I'll give you this gold that I have if you go do this thing. And he's like, well, he doesn't have a very big camp. Maybe I can go check out this gold. Maybe I can get it without. So he snuck around and he finds the gold, and it's like a solid, I don't know, for some reason it was useless. And he's like, thank God I ain't fucking go do that quest. This is useless gold. Like, it can't be used. It's stuck to this, whatever it was. But, you know, he did his due diligence. It's almost like more real. It's more realistic for a wasteland, you know? Sure, in Fallout, everything's kind of, not everything, but a lot of things are campy. But I feel like the Eastern Bloc games really come with.
Currency isn't fucking bottle caps. They're not out here with bobbleheads as like things they beat each other with. This is fucking hardcore.
Is blood.
This is hardcore. We're out here surviving with popping jokes, dude.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what interests me, and I don't think I knew it was on Game Pass. So maybe it's time to go boot that thing up.
Yeah, it's on Game Pass. Stalker 2 is so cool. And I mean, I think you nailed it perfectly, though. Like, a lot of these Eastern European games are just tough. They are sweaty. And you'll probably be sweating, and that will fuck with your aim in the game. You're right. Exactly. Like, so I do have a buddy of mine that played a lot of Stalker. He played Stalker when it got modded. He absolutely has been playing Stalker 2 nonstop while it came out. And he said that, like, you know, it's obviously very difficult, and there are a lot of people complaining about about that, but he's having a lot of fun with it and enjoying it and really liking the story. I mean, it visually looks amazing as well and just very and cool.
I guess it launched with a lot of bugs and it's at 82 despite all of that. Usually, like, you know, you launch with bugs, you're at 50% or whatever, you know, like it must be pretty fucking good to still be at 82.
That people could see past that is very impressive, I think.
Dude, yeah. So there's a lot of random shit that can happen in this wasteland, right? Like, and he said, this was a great story. He said that it took him a while to figure out that not only do you have to like holster your weapon, but it's better if you like put it on your back and come up with your hands up. If you're coming up to on a group of strangers, right? You want your hands up and show I come in peace. So he walks up on these other stalkers and he has his hands up. And as he's pulling up on them and they're turning to look at him, he gets struck by lightning, him, the character. And it made such a crackle. They all fucking pulled out they got scared. They got spooked. They pulled out their guns and shot him.
What? That's epic. That's
it was so good, dude. Cool.
Awesome.
I wish I had the bravery to play this game. I've always like had my eye kind of on Metro and Stalker because I love Escape from Tarkov and it's like also sweaty and difficult and I like shooters a lot, but I like horror, but as like Emilio and I have driven into the ground, both of us are like spooked at like, you know, a sneeze. And so I can't handle the horror elements of this game. It's too
guys,
scary.
I'll play Stalker. Can I build anything first?
No.
I won't.
Yeah, of course. You can build a whole world and probably do city planning. You know, it's a wasteland. I'm sure you could rebuild your civilization.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Stalker 2, that sounds fucking awesome. God, all the games we talk about sound great. There's not enough time in the day. And right. I'm going to add to them, right, guys? I'm going to add to these list of great games with King's Orders. So,
wait, is that on the King's Order that we're going to add it to the list of the great games? It's the King's Orders. Right?
Now hear this.
Yes?
The quick description of the game is, guys, when you're playing a strategy game like Crusader Kings 3, everything is so neat. It's so, you know, your little armies, they go where you tell them, oh, cross the strait. Yes, King, we'll do it immediately as soon as you click the cross strait button. No problem. Sway the Pope happens immediately. Starts happening the day you send it, no matter if you're right next to the Pope or you're 500 leagues away. The King's Orders is a strategy game where you run your kingdom by sending the orders. And I guess the twist is that the people who send the orders, they go on horseback and they go through the countryside. Things can happen to them. They themselves can be untrustworthy narrators of either what they're telling people to do or what they report back to you. And you as the king kind of have to sort through the evidence and just make the best decision that you can and send the best orders you can with the best
people.
Great
idea.
So when I saw this, I was like, awesome. It reminds me of Yes, Your Grace. That is different. It's more of a story game, but people come up to you with their problems and you have to be like, do I want to spend 10 gold searching the witch's forest for this boy's son? Or is this guy a little insane? Like, is his boy really going to be there? That was the interesting part about that game. And this game, it sounds like it's bringing that forward. So it's like my mom used to say, you hear things, you got to trust what you hear, and then you got to send a letter. Okay. That's what Big Papa Sprite told me. So it's all about reading and reading into who's telling you what and what their motivations are. So if the Duke of whatever is being sent to the Duke of what's his name to say, raise your army, what if they have a feud? And what if it's not in their best interest that they get the glory of raising their army and go on the battlefield? What if they say, you know what, disband your army? King's order is disband your army. And you don't hear about that till 2 months later. And you're 2 months into the war. You're like, well, shit, I was kind of counting on them raising their army, but I guess that's not going to happen. I like the premise of this game. It's definitely bought. It's in the cart. It's on the Steam sale for $15.99. And I'll report back whenever we talk about games next and see how it went.
Yeah, it's so hard to make a goddamn game because you get a premise, right? That's so awesome like this. But then you got to land. You got to stick the landing too.
Yeah.
You know, then you have to deliver. Premise is not always, because this is weird that I'm reading this, that's a 76, but then recently a 67. I guess that's a 10% drop, but Why? What changed? Maybe an update people didn't like? I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe people picked it up on the sale. A wider range of people with a lower price point are like, oh, I'll take a chance on this. And I was reading a couple of the reviews because, yeah, I noticed that too. And some of the negative reviews were like, oh, it's really tedious. And I was like, guys, it's a game about sending letters across the countryside. I mean, it's going to be kind of tedious. But maybe the actual gameplay itself is monotonous or something like that. I'm not 100% sure, but it got me with this pitch and with the screenshots. Like, it's a nice-ish looking game. It looks like you're looking like at a board game of Risk or something, and there's little towers and stuff of different colors on the field. So
this is probably a lot closer to what it was actually like to Rule than any of these other games that you're playing.
Exactly, yeah, which is kind of what is enticing me to it as well. That was The King's Orders. What do you got, Amanda?
Well, you know, it sounds like you were being very much of like a detective trying to figure out who you can trust, who you can't with your quests. And much like kind of diving into the mind, I put Mind Cop on my list. I'm still trying to work on these transitions.
God, I missed
those. I got it. So, Mind Cop is, we were just talking about, I love mystery games. I love detective games. They're super fun. I love getting to the bottom of that. This game made me so fascinated and curious because it's quite different in that you spend time, you get to the small little outskirt, like touristy town that has like nobody in it, and somebody's murdered, and you get there with your very, very tall partner who apparently sometimes carries you, which I think is kind of just a funny little goofy detail. But you have a certain amount of time to look at things before you can end the day. And at the end of each day, you can choose to arrest somebody. And if you're wrong, then the people that liked the person you arrested won't talk to you anymore, or the cops, or like they might deceive you, or they might lie to you because they're mad that you arrested their friend, especially if you're wrong. And so that I thought was kind of cool and a nice way to kind of put that in while you're trying to solve this murder. You're this, you're like this kind of eccentric guy that's going around trying to solve things. And a lot of times with these kind of games, they'll do text bubbles, and it drives me up the wall when games will have the weirdest sounds for it. And this game at first I thought was going to be one of them. It did one of my favorite things and one of my least favorite things all in one kind of text bubble, which was that they had this old school typewriter sound going as the text was coming out of the bubbles. And I loved that. I was like, that's cool as shit. But then they were doing goofy things like, like as the bit, and I'm like, I hate that.
Wait, can you give us
so
a couple
much.
More? You're gonna cut us off after two.
Yeah, these were pretty good.
So stupid. I was so pissed. I was like, I've never been in a spot where one of these games where I love and hate the thing going on at the same time. Except when you go into the settings, you can actually select.
You can turn off hair.
You can turn it. You can turn it on. And I was like, good. And I instantly nuked that checkbox. I was like, I don't want to listen to your harm. It's so stupid.
What did they name it?
Yeah,
it was like, I think like
audio
voice
emotes,
emotions or something
emotions.
Or emote. Yeah. Like vocal emotes or something. Yeah, I was like, I hate that. And so now I just listen to cool music because they do have cool music and you can hear the old typewriter as they're texting. And I love that.
Dude,
so
this is rocking
another,
96% positive right now.
Yeah, this is a super cool game. They don't even have it on sale because they're that bold. They don't need to. You should at least check out the demo. The demo's cool. It's fun. What's a really unique thing about this, though, in comparison to other mystery investigation games that I have never seen anywhere, is you can do this thing as the Mind Cop where you surf somebody else's brain when you touch them, which is super bizarre. And what it is at the bottom, there is your character surfing in the cerebral spinal fluid and you have to play this little mini game, which is essentially this tic-tac-toe as bullets go into their brain matter. It's bizarre and it's great. Honestly, it's a lot of fun. And so when you complete it and you're successful, it gives you three options and you get to the end of this surfing and you can go through these three different doors. You're able to go through all three. And so it's cool. You open up the door of truth and it goes flashbacks and shows you the character you're investigating a truthful scene that happened that they did. Then there's an uncertainty scene where it could be truth. It could be not. It might be a lie. And then they have a lie door that's just obnoxious. Like, the guy that I interviewed was a cop, and when I went into the lie, he was at a party where everybody was talking about how amazing the Mind Cop was. And it was like, clearly this is a lie. And it was hilarious. And everybody was like, you're so good. You're so good at brain surfing. And like, it's very funny. This game is super fun. Like, I really would love to play more of it. And I think that the storyline of it is pretty solid too. It feels very good of an investigation where you're actually checking things, looking into things. But
I like the art too.
And yeah, the like art the style. Is kind of neat yeah. too. Yeah, this like cartoony style, but everything's very grayscaled with like red. And then there's moments where it's just so they did such a really good job in this game of like playing with colors and everything like that. But it's all this like kind of, I guess, grayscale and then like pastel-y bright kind of fun colors, like a, you know, like a teal and like a bright violet or like a hot pink. And so I think it's really cool, the color scheme that they picked and the art style that they did. And this game's just super fascinating. I really wish that it would work on Steam Deck, and it does. It's verified, so that's great. And so you can, like I said, check out the demo. It's free. Definitely check out the demo. It's worth it. And the game's fantastic. It's $15. It was made by Andre Garris, that guy. This is only game.
It's his first game, and he's been working on it for 5 years, he says in his X bio. So I think, you know, 5 years coming out with a very positive 96 looks to be his first game on Steam, or maybe just the first game he's put out alone. That, you know, all of that adds to like the likelihood that I personally will check out a game, because I don't know, I just want to support people who are doing these sorts of like cool things. So yeah,
it's a cool game, highly recommend. And it's quite different than the other game that I also found on my radar, which is this game called Window Kill. And this is a twin stick shooter, but the game itself is a window that's constantly closing in on you on like what looks like a Windows XP desktop. So super interesting and retro, and you have to shoot to push the window edges, and sometimes you have to shoot to push the window far enough to get to the window that is the enemy that you're trying to shoot and kill. And so you can't kill them until you've expanded your own window far enough into their window. And then if the window so shrinks cool. enough, the whole game ends and all the windows just close, and it's like, fuck you.
You're kind of on an operating system kick, Amanda. You got, you know, Desktop Explorer, and then you have Window it Kill.
Really, yeah, it really, really all started with Desktop Explorer. And like, the team is so cool. They're really wonderful people. And I really think that what they're making in that puzzle is phenomenal. And Window Kill is really interesting as well. Also made by a single developer, one single dude, self-published. And so it right now off the gate, it's got 96% of overwhelmingly positive reviews so far. And it's on sale for $4. I mean, $4. That's
what
nothing.
What are you doing not playing this?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I feel like, Emilio, this one's up your alley, dude. Yeah, I know you're a fan of Yeah.
I'm adding
you
it
should
to
definitely
my cart.
Check this out. Yeah, absolutely. So that one's cool. I think that one's pretty neat. But yeah, so that's Window Kill. And before that was Mind Cop. And that's all I got.
Nice. All right. Moving
now
on
that you
down.
Said that, I'm going to do a rundown before I forget. So the games we talked about on the highlight was Windblown, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, some obscure game nobody's heard of, Call of the Lamb, and then on the radar was King's Orders, Stalker 2, Mind Cop, and Window Kill.
Love
yeah,
that.
Nice.
Okay. That's why I get the big bucks around here, guys.
Yeah, that's right. Just random mid. It's all good. Listener questions, Amanda. What do we got?
All right. So the first listener question that we've got is coming in hot from Scram TX, and he's asking, maybe it's a little bit of a piggyback from the last episode where we talked about the sale and how we do our wish lists and things like that. But he asked, how many games are on your wish list right now? And I'm going to say, I remember in the last episode, Christian had talked about how he's got a ton. That basically he just adds things to his wish list that he finds interesting and he's going to check out later. And I do quite a bit of that. And then I pull a little bit of what Emilio does and I use my wish list then and go through during the sales to kind of see and edit my wish list. Like, okay, it's getting a little too big. I got to trim it down a little bit. And so I've trimmed it down to a Yeah, well, I've trimmed it down to a very tiny, very, very tiny, small, small number. Bobby would be proud of 107 titles. Nice.
Perfect.
So, what about you, Christian? Because I know you're just adding. So how many interesting things you got on your wish list?
I don't believe in curtailing the wish. Let the wish list grow. Let it expand. Let it reach its top and mightiest form. I have 312 games on my wish list, and the only way those fuckers are getting off is if they get in the basket. When you purchase a game, obviously it removes it from your wish list. And so I'm just not buying enough games, and I'm finding too many things that are interesting.
Hey, dude, yeah. It's the only way that your library is going to be bigger than Bobby's, dude. You have a bigger wish list library. That's all.
Yeah.
There you go.
We're bigger, Emilio, in different ways.
Yeah. Well, Emilio, now that the sale is going on and you've kind of limited or, you know, pruned your wish list, how many games do you have on it?
23.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm looking at some of these losers. I'm gonna get rid of them.
About to be 19, because five of these gotta go.
Then he's gonna have Bobby look at it. Bobby be like, "That's too much. It needs to be 3."
Yeah. It needs to go to another committee. I think we can cut another 15%. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Then it's all right. But Scram's got another question. Speaking of Emilio, he asks, "Are there any plans to add access to Emilio's OnlyFans account to one of the Patreon support levels?"
That's good. I don't like to muddle money. You know, we have my high value production and our low value production over here.
Yeah,
and if you're giving me hundreds and we only have, you know, we're getting tens over here, you know, it gets kind of weird. What's really half? Whose dick is bigger? There's a lot of weird overlap there. So I like to keep it completely separate.
Yeah. So, it's not a Patreon support level. It's just free.
Yeah. Literally just text me and I'll send you my tip.
It's not that interesting. It's not that safeguarded, I should say.
Yeah. All right. Well, next question, it's coming in from Marconius. And he says that he set out this year to finish 3 games. Those were Metro Exodus, Yakuza Like a Dragon, and Baldur's Gate 3. He finished the first 2, and he's really close to finishing the final battle.
Really
in
close?
Baldur's Gate 3.
Doesn't cut it,
really
Marconius.
Close, which
get
means
the
he's
fuck
got 10
out.
More hours. He's got 10 more hours. Yeah.
You call so that really got close when you're done, you fucker.
Yeah. So he's got 2 questions. The first one is, how do you decide which games you're going to beat? And do you have a criteria where you've decided, okay, I've had enough of this game? And then we'll get on to the bonus question. But so what do you, Christian, we'll start with you. How do you decide which games you're going to beat and what's the criteria for them?
Well,
when you've decided it's enough?
I think it's a little difficult for this podcast, and we've talked about this a bit, to actually fully 100% a game. Takes so much time. We're all kind of short on time, but yeah, we do this podcast where we play all these games. So when I stop playing a game is usually when I feel like I've got the gist of it and I have enough to maybe talk about what's the unique cool thing that they're doing. And then the games that I really beat are obviously the games that I love. And I don't even really want to say beat, because a lot of the games that I sink tens and hundreds of hours into are games that aren't really beatable, like Crusader Kings 3 or like City Skylines, any of the Total War games. There's just so much to do that to really beat the game, to go down every tree, to do everything, I mean, it's pretty much impossible. So yeah, that's how I kind of go about how I play games and how I beat them and what I spend most of my time on.
Are you still on the Crusader Kings kick?
Well, it's funny. I listened to the last episode and it just reminded me that I'm only playing Crusader Kings 3, and I did want to play something else in this time off. I only have 1 more week off work, so I've wanted to for a long time. I've never played any of the Mass Effect games. I don't know who the fuck Miranda is. I don't know what a mess, whatever. I don't know anything. And so I purchased Mass Effect and put, I don't know, 6 or 5 hours into it so far. And I think that's the end of Crusader Kings 3 for this period of degeneracy, but maybe in a year I'll go back to it, put another 100 hours into, like, I know, honey, it's waiting for me, you know, it's always going to be there.
Just in time, you'll have time just enough for Crusader Kings 4. That's when you'll free it up for part three.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like the criteria for when you've had enough of Crusader Kings 4 was realizing, oh, fuck, I only have a week left to complete all the other shit I know how to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Amanda, what about you, Amelia?
You play a lot of smaller games, so that must be a lot easier.
Yeah, I try to make achievable goals, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I'm a lot more like Christian with that, and that like I want to try and play a whole bunch of different games. Being on this podcast impacts that as well. And I want to really get kind of the feel of the game. I also have never really been a completionist kind of person. I want the game to unfold how it would be with playing, and that does include missing some things. But I like the experience of it, and so to me, there are certain games where I'm like, if there is a very personal attachment to it, then I have to beat it. But even then, sometimes I might get all the way to the end and be like, I can't let this go. So then I'll purposely not beat it. Divinity Original Sin 2 is actually like that.
Yeah.
Lotion and I are at the very, very last thing at the very end where we know if we go through this thing, it ends the game and we just can't end it. And so... technically, I've never beaten Divinity Original Sin 2, but I have. I just am choosing not to because I can't say goodbye to it yet. So there's moments like that that has happened. Skyrim did that to me, too, where like I really didn't want to completely end it, even though Skyrim, of course, continues on. Yeah. UN, but like it does
feel still different. Kinda, I'll tell you that.
It feels different. Yeah. And
you killed
so
all the dragons and then you're back and then the dragons are there and you're like, well, I don't. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Spoilers, okay, dude. Cool. Are you kidding?
This one.
Jesus.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. 2011 games. Too many spoilers. But no. So I mean, a lot of times I'll try to beat the game if I can, but I might not get all the way through. So my criteria of where I've had enough of it is whenever I don't have any more time, obviously, or I will be like, if I get pissed off enough, I guess, is another one, which is why a lot of times I don't like to play too many roguelikes because I'll get angry. And if I get too angry, then I can't beat it. And I'm like, fuck this game. So that's kind of my criteria with ending things. But like, what about you, Emilio? I don't know. Have you finished a lot of games? Sorry, that sounded a little loaded.
Not in a long time.
Yeah.
I actually finished one, I don't know, like a month ago. And then before that, I think it had been... fucking like over a year. What was I gonna tell you? I did like something you said, that missing things is part of the game design. They don't expect you to hit everything the first time through. That's why they jam pack it with a bunch of stuff so that you'll hit it on the second playthrough if you get there. But if you don't, it wasn't even intended. That's really interesting because I play completionist, which drives me nuts because I don't even have time for regular game playthrough, and then I get sick of it because I'm checking every single corner and every nook and cranny everywhere, and it takes me so much longer to play games. Like right now I'm playing the zombie game, fuck,
Project Zombie Boy. Project Zero Zomboy? Sievert.
No, it's the action one. I have it right here. I'm playing it. Dead Island 2. I'm playing Dead Island 2, and I'm playing it, first of all, I'm enjoying it, but I'm playing it very slowly, methodically. I'm looking for everything. I'm sneaking around. I'm pretty sure it's an action game, but I'm like playing it my own way. And I think I'm going much slower than the typical person would be. So I'm probably not going to finish it, but I'm having a good time. And I'll just play in it until I stop having a good time. That's basically what happens. And then every, I don't know, month or so, I'll audit my hard drive and I'll be like, don't need this, don't need this, don't need this. Sometimes I have a really hard time. Like Baldur's Gate 3 has been there since it was in beta. You know, I just won't take off. I won't get those 200 gigs back. They're just partitioned. It's a partition drive that I just don't get to use. Yeah. It's weird. I don't know. Listen, folks, everybody, when it's up for me to say I'm like a cricket. I respond to stimuli. Nothing's planned. I don't have a way I do things. Just things happen and then I react. So that's how I live my life. So as soon as I see something, I go, meh, I just take it off. And if I look at it and I go, I keep it around. That's about it.
He's gone into the settings of life and has made sure to click that emote sound, you know.
Here, I'll give you a preview right here, right now. So these are in order of how much gigs they're taking up, right? So like Baldur's Gate 3, I'm like, Avatar, I haven't played that in about a month and it's taking up 92 gigs. So I'm like, that one's barely holding on. Cyberpunk, I'm like, better stick around. Street Fighter. Oh, yeah. So there you go. That's how it works.
Sweet.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice.
And that was in real time speed, too. So it takes a very long time to control.
Oh, that's great. We've got one final bonus question. We've talked so much about Baldur's Gate 3 already this episode. This is a great bonus question from Marconius. He said that he really liked the podcast themed episode on Star Wars games. He asked if we could get one on Larian games, or at least covering Baldur's Gate 3 and do a Baldur's Gate 3 episode, because Shadowheart is forever in his heart. I don't know how you guys feel about that. I would love a episode on that. Baldur's Gate 3 idea. And talking about it.
I think you two and Nick should do it.
Yeah, Nick spent a lot of time on Baldur's Gate.
It's like fourth playthrough, completed playthrough, I think he's on.
That's nuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what his criteria is. Is it going to be finally Asterion like breaks his heart? Is that going to be it? That he's just like, fuck this game?
One day I'll get all these jokes. I'm going to be listening back to these in my retirement home and be like, oh
Asterion.
I know who he is.
Go back to bed, Grandpa.
Pass the tequila.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I think putting things to bed, I think that's an episode, guys. What's everybody playing next week?
I'm having a really good time with Dead Island 2 right now, honestly. Maybe keep playing that. And I'm my weekly players that I'm just playing all the time are always Magic Commander, Space Marine 2, and Windblown.
Nice. I'm going to put the effect in Mass Effect. So I beat the first mission, like the tutorial, I guess. And I have I have like a page of notes of like everything, like just my thoughts. And I'm like, why do I have so much on so little? You know, like I could talk about Mass Effect right now for sure. But next week I want to get a little further deep into it, because obviously I'm only at the tip of the iceberg and whatever. They named their ship the Normandy, right? Like,
yes.
Anyway, save me.
You know, Mass Effect 1 was a good game, but like it wasn't like a world stomper. It was Mass Effect 2 that really brought everything together, and that's the one that, like, that's the one to write it home took about.
Everyone. Well, I wanted to play these games since, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when you guys were talking about it on this podcast, and you said that the decisions you make in Mass Effect 1 affect.
Yeah.
What happens in Mass Effect 3? And I thought that's so cool for an RPG to have a line through like that. I definitely want to experience that, but I'm going to have to put in a lot of time, like huge things.
Who your crew is, like huge things.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is so cool. Yeah. And it works on the Steam Deck, no problem. So awesome. Right. Even though it uses the Origin launcher. Yeah.
Are you playing Legendary Edition?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Nice. All
right. And then,
I was gonna say, realistically, I'm gonna play Call of Duty Black Ops 6 after this. I got to go hunting. Yeah, I'm hunting for some props, and I'm hopefully not gonna be a goddamn table. I get to be like, you know, a little envelope. But no. but also too, I really want to check out this game that this local guy from Portland made. He is like a solo developer and created this game called Dream Shark, and he put it on like a Game Boy. Like he made an actual like Game Boy cartridge and you can play it on a Game Boy emulator. And it's this whole world of being a little alien boy and people don't really know how to deal with like a child in the space world. So he's just there. And so it looks interesting. And so I definitely want to check that out. So Call of Duty and Dream Shark.
Nice. Awesome. And are you a COD carry? Like, are you a hard carry, Amanda?
I don't know. I feel like I'm a wild card. Like, if I sometimes I'm doing good, and when I'm doing good, I'm doing fucking good. and then sometimes I just nosedive with it. Typically, I'm kind of more of a finisher in a sense, though, especially when I was playing Cyber Attack. I would be the one that would be reviving people the most and near the end getting the end kills and solidifying the win. But playing so much Team Deathmatch and Prop Hunt, I'm go up and down.
Up and down. All right, cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking for Christian, Amanda, and myself, legendary titties, everybody. And we're going to play you out with Sharon's theme from As Dusk Falls.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So I could be making money with my OnlyFans? What the fuck?
Dude, get your business model together.